Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 218, presented by CLNS Media and sponsored by our good friends over at Prize Picks and Facta Meals. My name is Connor Ryan, and once again, we are joined by the esteemed 98.5 The Sports Hub's Ty Anderson. Ty, what's going on?
What's up? How are we doing today?
Ty, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good. I got a little bit of a different setup today. The desk is currently occupied by a small cat, so we're not going to go over there right now. We're going to leave it be. We're going to let her do her thing. So a little bit of a different setup today, but we're good all the same.
That's good. You're improvising on the fly. You're saying that we're not going to get a Doom appearance, or there could be. You never know. She might just mosey on over it all, or
yeah, she might. I mean, she might. She's a fan of theatrics, so that might happen at some point, but we'll have to wait and see if that comes to be.
Gotcha. We'll keep a head on a swivel here for that. But looking at the Boston Bruins, and they finally have wrapped up that six-game road trip, ending it with a convincing win over the Carolina Hurricanes, jumped out to a 3-0 lead, end up holding on for 4-1 victory. And Ty, when I think you look at just the way the Bruins played in that game, coupled with how they finished that game against Nashville. And even if you want to look at like the bigger picture of just how they played against quite a few of these playoff teams over this last couple of weeks or so, what has been your kind of main takeaway in terms of how the Bruins seem to have been settling into maybe more of a groove with the playoffs right around the corner?
Yeah. I mean, they're passing the test, right? And I think this is the big difference from this year versus last year, where you were trying to make games feel important when the teams were, you know, shitty quality. Like, I feel like last year they played Buffalo like 5 times in the final 3 months of the season or something nonsensical like that. You know, you're trying to build up games against Ottawa. You're trying to build up games against Montreal. And you know, they were so far and ahead of everybody else, right? And so, you know, I remember late last year, there was that Bruins-Devils game and at the Garden. We were like, this is a big one. It's going to be a big game. And then they stomped them. And it was like, okay, never mind. Not a big game. Yeah. Like, and so, you know, I think that's kind of like the if you want to look at the positive this year, it's like they're getting hard tests and they're passing them. You know, excuse me, sorry. I think ironically enough, the worst game of this road trip for them came against the worst team, in my opinion, the Capitals. Like, that was probably their worst game. They won the game, but it wasn't really all that crazy. Their best efforts, Florida, Nashville, Carolina. So you got to feel good about that as a Bruins fan.
Yeah, and I think when you look at just even comparing it to last year, where, as you said, Christ, it felt like they played, like it dragged on for weeks in terms of getting ready for the playoffs and the anticipation of what we thought was going to be a lot longer of a run here for that team. But it's almost like when you get to that series against Florida, like they just weren't equipped to, you know, what to do next when you get punched in the mouth. And the Bruins this year, to their credit, I don't know if you call it to their credit or what have you, but they've been punched in the face quite a bit. As great as the record is, they've had their fair share of ups and downs. They've had a lot of ugly losses where you know, you're taking the elevator down to the locker room. You're like, it's going to be a rough one in there today. There's no easy way to kind of sugarcoat or spin a positive on some of these losses they've had, but to their credit, they've taken those lumps and they've built off of it. Like, I even look at, as you said, that Washington game, bit of a snoozer, bit of a lot not going on in that game. Really had multiple opportunities to put Washington away, but in terms of dealing with adversity, like that Bruins team last year didn't have all that much of it. Look at that game against Washington where you're killing 4 minutes of a power play in overtime. You look at even like the Bruins answering the call and scoring empty net goals against Nashville and Carolina. Like all these things that they're solving and facing now should, you know, help them out once you get to when the games actually matter later on this month.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I think there's been a test in basically every game, right? And you know, even their losses, right? They go 4-2 on this trip. The losses are one goal losses. Yeah. Or they were, you know, the Tampa Bay game, they get the empty netter. So it's not, but it was a one goal game, you know, effectively. They're not getting blown out in these games. And I think that's what's really sort of not important, but they're in it, right? And when you're in it, you have to play with this sort of level of compete and this level of composure that you're going to need, you know, to your point, in 2 weeks, you're going to need that, you know, what it's like to be in a tight checking game, because playoffs rarely are blowouts, right? And so I think that's one thing you have to be, you know, happy about, pleased about with this team. And, you know, I think that for all the complaining and the, oh, they're not that good, as they're not as good as their record, they're not this, they're not that, like, they're still really good against playoff teams, right? And we continue to see that they get up for these games, and it's no longer shocking that their best checking efforts and their best three zone efforts are coming against teams that they could play in the second or the third round. And I think that's kind of, that's promising. That's encouraging. I go, like, we go back to last year, right? Like, to your point, when the playoffs started, I don't think they were in playoff mode. It was almost like, oh, finally it's here. And then it started happening. Like, oh, this is actually a lot faster than we realized. And so they shouldn't be blitzed this year by anything that happens in the playoffs, right? So there's something to be said for that, that we can talk about, oh, they're not as good as they're not. Well, they're tested, right? Like, they've been through the highs and the lows, as you said. And so now it's just about getting your house in order before game one, like your lineup decisions and what, and your health and what have you. But mentally, they're battle tested, as you mentioned. They're winning against good teams. I like where they're at right now. It's a fool's errand, I know, being excited or even somewhat encouraged about the Bruins team. I get it. We've all been burned 1,000 times now. But I do think this team has been better. I think they've been better than I think they've been as good as their record. Let me put it that way. When you look at the context of their wins.
I think it was a few weeks ago, and this was still when they were in a bit of that post All-Star break rut, where it felt like they were either going to overtime every game or were having kind of these no-show or extended lapses of really poor play. There was one, like, again, shockingly, a positive Bruins fan that was like spinning it of like, well, the Bruins have lost what, like 15 OT games? It means they're in every game. When you get to the playoffs and it's not 3-on-3 anymore and you're able to grind games out and all of a sudden a loose puck goes your way, like, they're a team that could go on a little bit of a run here just on the fact they're always in these games. And I was like, overly optimistic, but I get the logic. When you add in the fact that they've elevate their games against these playoff opponents, it's like, yeah, again, that's not meaning that this is a, we're not doing like, what is it called? Like the KenPom, like secret math they do for like March Madness, where it's like, you got to be in the right quadrant of like offensive and defensive efficiency. We're not breaking it down like that, but They're always in the fight, really. Like, other than like a few games against the Rangers, who seem to really have had their number this year, they're not getting like smoked by these teams that are viewed as the, you know, maybe the top teams in the league. You have losses. You have like the Oilers game at home where you know, they let that game slip away from them. But there's really been times where, in terms of a definitive like statement game, where they've either put their foot off, taken their foot off the gas, or haven't really responded to whatever some of the best teams are in the league. And that should be encouraging if you're a Bruins fan.
Yeah, 100%. And you look at the way this team is built, right? Like, they're not a high-flying skill team. They're kind of a garbage goal team. And the playoffs, if you're in these games and you just funnel a puck to the front of the net, weird shit happens, man. I've seen enough of these playoffs in my life to know that it's not always the pretty tic-tac-toe goal that happens. And I think that the more of these kind of games you're in, I don't know if it plays to your strengths necessarily, but like, who's to say the Bruins can't just have the Zaka goal happen in a playoff game, the goal he had against Florida, where you just throw it on, it bounces through some bodies and in. Like, that's kind of what the playoffs are. And so if they're winning those kind of games and they're playing those kind of games and they are close to the end, doesn't it give you even a little bit of confidence, a little bit of comfort, knowing that it's not going to be completely uncharted territory for this team? And, you know, I just think that, like, there's nothing that I've accepted more in my life than the fact that the Stanley Cup playoffs are a complete coin flip. They're a coin flip. Like, the things that you think should happen, or the things that happened for 82 games, suddenly might not happen for 13 days, and now your season is over. And so I think the first round is especially true in that regard. And so that's where, like, you know, I feel good about the Bruins, but that's not to say that I'm telling you they're going to win a series in five or six games. Like, I could see them losing in five, and I could see them going to the Stanley Cup final. I really could. That's the variables that are at play 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is absolutely going to be, I think it's what John Cooper says, it's the Wild West in terms of the first round, right? So, and we will talk a little bit later on in the show about John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning, because the Bruins might be facing them in a couple of weeks. But before we go into that, other news from Friday, Dan Heinen is the Bruins nominee for the Masterton Trophy, which is given to a player that shows the most perseverance throughout the season. It can be one of many things that lead to it. But when you look at Danton Heinen's road that he had this year of signing a PTO deal going into the year, people forget, like, he was also the second guy. Like, Alex Chiasson signed before him in terms of that PTO contract. So he earned a spot out of camp. Can't sign a contract till what? October 30th, I think.
Yes.
And you look at just the way that he's performed.
Happy Halloween, Danton. Sorry.
Yes, exactly. No, it's like all of a sudden it's like he's ready to go trick-or-treating. And Don Sweeney calls him. He's like, no, you got a game tonight. So, which is
he's dressed as the Flash. He's like, can it be like tomorrow?
Yeah. And to his credit, didn't show up in a Halloween costume or anything, but he's performed at a high level. I mean, he's got, you know, getting close to 40 points off of, I think, close to 70 games now. It does feel like it was a bit of a no-brainer for, you know, us in terms of voting, in terms of what Heinen has brought this year, given all the adversity he has dealt with.
100%. And I think what's really impressive about Danton Heinen is the fact that, again, this was true when he was here the first time around, but I've said this before, he never makes a line worse. A line is never bad because Danton Heinen is on it, right? Like, it might not be great, but it's going to be good. And so I think that you've seen that in all his roles this year. He's made everybody around him better in some fashion. Nobody's been worse for having to play with him. And that's, you know, if Danton Heinen were on the Florida Panthers, right, we'd be saying, man, how come the Bruins can't identify cheap talent like that? Like it was something that made the Tampa Bay Lightning better towards their second Stanley Cup, the 2021 one, where, like, they had to bring in some cheap veteran guys. They had to bring in, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk, right, before that. Like, you have to find ways to bring in and get max value. And Danton Heinen has been max value for this team, really, from the jump. They're outscoring opponents when he's on the ice. You can rely on him to make the sometimes safe but boring but effective play. And I think that, you know, people like us in the summer, we were talking about the challenges ahead of this team. I was very upfront. You were not going to find a Tyler Bertuzzi replacement. You had to try to find somebody who could hang with Zacha and Pasternak. Danton Heinen can hang with Zacha and Pasternak, and you're seeing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You look at just the way that they've all performed together. And again, Heinen's, I don't know what the knock against him usually is, just that he's not assertive enough or what have you, or, you know, he's not a flashy player by any means, right? But, like, you look at the way he's played, especially with Pasternak and Zacha, like, that setup that led to that Zacha goal in Nashville is like, the hell was that? And again, right, like, that's kind of what they've been. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the Bruins are outscoring teams 14-4 when that group's on the ice. Like, that is a impactful line, and it's almost like you saw how good Pasternak was with Bertuzzi last year. Like, you started the playoffs, Bertuzzi was very productive, but doesn't mean all that much when you're also giving up 7 5-on-5 goals down the other end of the ice. Like, not to say that this team is going to be bulletproof when Heinen's out there with Pasternak and Zacha, but he's a defensively responsible player, and if he's making those little plays that maybe don't get recognized on the score sheet, or he's doing something that leads to a goal 15 seconds after he makes it, like, those all lead to success when you've got a guy like David Pastrnak and a guy like Zaka who's been red hot since then. It all just helps each of them out. Like, we know what Pastrnak can do. He can produce with any player out there, but to have Heinen find a role here and also Zaka to get rolling here, as much as Jim Montgomery's kind of shuffled up these lines quite a bit, I wouldn't touch this line right now. That's probably your best overall line in terms of it's like you're got a two-way buzzsaw in terms of those guys when they're out there together.
Yeah, and I think it really comes back down to sort of how you look at Danton Heinen and where he fits, right? Like, we go back to his first Boston run. He was good with Coyle and Johansson, but he was also great with Bergeron and Marchand, right? And then we go back to when he scored 18 goals with the Penguins in 21-22. He got a lot of time with Malkin, got some time with Crosby. Like, and now you look at him, he's thriving with your superstar, David Pastrnak. And so maybe this is a guy who is never going to have the 60-point season, but he's going to be the perfect complement to your superstar players, right? And those players are valuable. Like, you go back to, you know, when the Vancouver Canucks had the Sedins, they had Alex Burrows. And I'm not telling you that Heinen is Burrows at all, but, like, you always
chomping,
you,
just chomping fingers.
But you always got that guy, man, who's got to help elevate, you know, or your superstars help elevate, you know, maybe an okay player or a good player to a good or borderline great player. And so, or they can just hang, right? That's like that at the very worst, they can hang with them. And so I think that's what Heinen is. And listen, if I were Don Sweeney, I'd be trying to get to the negotiating table and saying, hey, can we bang out a 3-year deal where you're making, you know, $2 million, $2.5 million per, something like that, and where it just becomes a great value? Because Jim Montgomery talked about this today, right? Like, he can play all over. He can play fourth line, third line, second line, PK, power play. You put them all over the place. Those players are valuable. And that's, you got to keep those guys around, in my opinion.
Yeah. And when you look at especially the what this offseason was for him and how tough it was, a little bit of security with a 3-4 year deal might go a long way for him. So we'll see how that kind of plays out once we get to the offseason, whenever that happens. But before we talk a little bit more about the Bruins tie, let's take a quick break. Hear from our good friend Evan Marinovsky as he talks about our good friends over at Prize Picks.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Prize Picks is so easy to play. I can make my Celtic picks and make my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals and easy gameplay and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one fantasy sports app. Celtics and NBA fans, you can get in on Prize Picks in 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. On Prize Picks this week, I'm selecting Jason Tatum to dish out more than 5 assists and his teammate Jaylen Brown to have more than 22.5 points. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks.
Shout out to our good friends over at Prize Picks. All right, Ty, looking down the final stretch here as the Bruins get ready for the playoffs, what is like the one thing you're looking for in terms of this team's approach, whether it's, you know, how you want them to play, what lineup decisions they need to make? Like, what do you think is the most important thing as this team gets ready to cross the finish line with game 82?
I think you got to figure out what your ideal top six is, and top six, I mean on the back end. Who are your ideal six defensemen? We've seen Lindholm and McAvoy together. That's always a borderline cheat code for this team, as we know. However, I do think that you're a deeper team when these guys are separated, and you only have to worry about, say, 18 minutes of the game versus, you know, 36, right? And so I think that, you know, I liked Peak and Lindholm together. I'd like to see that again. You know, Grzelcyk is really interesting. I was doing the radio this week, and I said Grzelcyk might be the only guy in the league who's either a top pairing left shot D or scratch. Like, those are like kind of seems like the two options for him right now, and it's a little bizarre. It's weird, right? And so I think you got to get that settled down. Now, ultimately, it may be like the goaltending, and it may not matter because they may use all eight guys they have right now at one point or another. You know, injuries can always happen, as we know. But I think you want to have a good read on, like, what is your optimal 6D that you're going to roll out there in game one? Because, you know, I think their best defensive games have coincided with their best wins of the season. So that's got to be a thing for this team. You know, come game one, they got to know who's out there and who they can rely on, because they're going to have to win that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you look at the six-man unit they had out there against Carolina. That's probably who I would pick. Like, just those six guys, regardless of where they slot in. Like, I think Lori and Shattenkirk can bring value, of course. But and I think if this team goes on a run, you're going to have contributions all across these guys, injuries and matchups, what have you. But I do like these six players out there. But as you said, it's where exactly do they best fit? Like, it is intriguing. Like, again, as someone who thinks that both Grzelcyk and McAvoy both benefit, obviously, when they're playing together, and how much spreading the wealth, putting Lindholm with Carlo can benefit all parties. But it is intriguing to see them maybe give Grzelcyk a look with a guy like Peak and have it kind of be what it was in 2019, right? Where, like, Grzelcyk was kind of your third pair. You know, you could curtail his minutes, but he's the puck-moving guy that gets his maybe steadier defensive partner. You know, back then it was Kevin Miller. Now it's Andrew Peak. You know, I think he can complement in a role like that, but it all comes down to how I think Lindholm and McAvoy, how you want to structure that decor. Because again, as you said, it is a cheat code. It is a grouping that can really take over the game. But if all of a sudden, like, Brendan Carlo, who you're tasked with being your shutdown guy, is taking on water, if Weatherspoon's not ready for that role, like, it causes everything to kind of, it's like a Jenga tower, right? Like, you got the top of your depth chart is locked in with Lindholm and McAvoy, but if the other guys are taking on water, it all comes apart. Like, and you have such small margin for error once you get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's a ripple effect. Everything they do is has a rest of the defense lineup ripple, I think. And that's, you know, that you go back to the Washington game, Grzelcyk played, I think, 13 and a half minutes. Barely used, right? You go back to Thursday, they got Brandon Carlo and Hampus Lindholm in the box for almost two full minutes, and they opt to go with a two forward, one defenseman look, you know, on the kill. And I'm curious why they did that. I actually meant to ask about that today, why that was the look. But you know, if you don't trust a guy to play in all situations, we know Grzelcyk can play on the power play. We've seen that before. But if he's not an option for you on the PK in your mind, that really hurts his availability, I think, in my opinion. So just everything they do, and when they take so many penalties, and when Lindholm takes so many stick infractions and things like that, like if you are not able to stay out of the box, like, you may have to go with a guy that you can deploy on the PK, or at least have a bit more comfort in deploying on the PK. And the weird thing is that the three guys that I think are on the shakiest footing, you know, Lowry, Shattenkirk, Grzelcyk, none of them are guys you'd say are PK specialists, or guys that you're super comfortable putting out there on the kill.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Again, all these guys have their pros and cons in terms of what they provide, but I still think the six-man group they have now does give them their best bet in terms of, you know, the versatility, what they can do. It all just depends on where these guys are structured. So we'll see kind of how they approach it over these last couple of games. But Ty, before we wrap this pod up, let's take another quick break. Hear from our good friends over at Factor Meals.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Once again, shout out to our good friends over at Factor Meals. All right, Ty, still a few more games to go in the regular season, but you read the tea leaves, you look at the probabilities. It does feel like the Bruins are going to face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. At least that's the way it looks right now, barring a collapse or what have you. And when you look at just what Tampa Bay brings in terms of, one, they're playing really well at the right time on their calendar. Look at guys that have high-end talent that have won a couple of times already. Is this kind of the worst-case scenario for the Bruins in terms of who they could draw in that first round?
Yeah, first of all, because I can never not scratch this itch. Sick playoff format. You got guys 5 weeks, five games left in the season, and we basically know what's going to happen in terms of who's going to play who. That's great. You love that. I love to make an 82-game season not matter in the slightest. I will go to my grave, Connor. This playoff structure's got to go. It sucks. It is brutal. It makes 82 games completely meaningless. That the Boston Bruins are going to finish with perhaps the second most points in the Eastern Conference, and they're going to draw what is effectively the sixth seed in the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, and I know, like you're saying, oh, what's the difference between a six and a seven seed? Well, right now it's 10 points. It's five wins. It's they're a marketably better team than the Philadelphia Flyers. So good system you got here, guys. Really awesome. You know, the Lightning are playing incredible right now. They're what? They got 9 wins in the last 11 games. Vasilevsky looks great. Their team defense has been phenomenal, in my opinion. It's going to be a tough challenge. However, maybe that's what this team needs. You know, like, this may sound crazy, like, because who doesn't want the cupcake in round one? But if this team is going to go anywhere, they're going to have to go through something like this at some point, right? And so it sucks for them. But maybe it's also exactly what they need, you know, to spring a potential long run. You know, I do wonder internally, like, if they got, like, Detroit, let's just say, right? And they dispatched them in 5 games, it's over. And then they face Florida, who just went to 7 games with Tampa or Toronto, whoever, right? Doesn't Florida have the advantage now? So, like, I just wonder, like, if we're thinking this team is going to win a round, I don't know, man. Get the Goliath out of the way. They've never slayed this dragon. They've never done it. I would just wonder if slaying this dragon could propel them to something greater than what we think their ceiling may be.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great point. It's almost like this whole thing is a crapshoot, Ty, when you look at the way these things are structured. I mean, it's something where you look at, you know, I mentioned this talking to you today, like the Bruins in 2019, they did benefit, right? Like you play a very good Toronto team in the first round, you emerge through 7 games, and then it's like the gates kind of open up a little bit, right? Like Tampa Bay's a juggernaut that year. They get bounced. All of a sudden you play a Carolina team that exceeds expectations, but weren't really ready for the spotlight there, right? Like they took care of them. But like, I don't know. You also look back at some of those teams. That Columbus team that upset Tampa in that series, it was very good. Like that team easily, you look at like the way they were built that year, the amount of talent they had all across the lineup. They had Bobrovsky there as well. Like, that's a team that you could have seen gone on a pretty deep run when you look at just the way they are playing. And so, again, it's like you want to map out any scenario, whether it's a team that just sneaks into the playoffs. Like, we can talk about Tampa, who's hot right now based on the fact they've got all these veteran guys there. But, like, let's say the Islanders become the team that, against all will, clinches that second wildcard spot. Because right now, no one wants to clinch that spot at all. Like, They all hate it. But like that Islanders team, generally pretty unimpressive, but we know how they operate. They can go on they can grind their way through a couple of series wins as well. So if you're the Bruins, maybe the Bruins fans, you're so focused in on just getting past that first round. It would be easier if you're playing Detroit, Washington, what have you. But whoever you draw, there's gonna be matchups that are gonna skate you. Washington, right? That team is not that great. Oh, you look at Charlie Lindgren, how he's been playing the last month. That can steal you a series. Like, it is true that, again, if it's Bruins Tampa, it's going to be a tough out. They've got veteran pedigree. They've got guys in the bottom six, not as good as they were in the past, but can play that pain in the ass kind of role that you need from those guys in the playoffs. But if you get past that team, and it's almost like the Celtics, if they played like the Miami Heat in the first round, you get past that team that's given you hell for years now. Maybe that's the spark you need to get on a roll.
Yeah, go back to Vancouver in 2011. They had to get over the Chicago hump. They did. It was a flawed Chicago team, but it required a Game 7 overtime, and they got over it, you know? And then, you know, you go back to the Bruins having to beat Montreal in 2011, a team that had their number, in my opinion. You know, Carey Price and just a team that was always a thorn in your side, right? Like just one of those teams that kind of bugged you. And so, you know, I look at it from that standpoint, and it's like, yeah, you're going to have to go through some, you know, iron sharpens the iron, right? And that's how I look at the playoffs, and it's a coin flip, yeah, but I do think the Bruins have bridged the gap a little bit between themselves and Tampa Bay. You know, Tampa still has a high-end skill, and they're going to get theirs. It is what it is, right? But if you go back the last, I want to say since the Bruins added Linus Ullmark, Linus has been good against Tampa, and the Bruins, as a result, have had better games against Tampa. Now, you know, you look at the last result, Lightning win. You look at the game in Tampa before that. I think it was a 5-4 overtime game that Tampa won. Like, but then I go back to the games in Boston. The Bruins killed them. Like, what was it, like 7-3 or 8-3? It was something insane like that. So, like, these teams kind of trade punches. And so it'd be an even series, but it'd be the perfect way after complaining about last year and how they weren't ready for playoffs. Like, that would get you ready right away. Tampa Bay gets you ready off the jump immediately. Here you go. So maybe that's good for them at this point. We don't know. It's like we've said all show. It's a coin flip. It's a crapshoot. You never know.
Absolutely. So we will see how it all plays out in terms of who the Bruins play, how they get ready down the stretch, all that good stuff. Ty, before we let you go, where can we read your stuff? Where can we hear you on the radio waves? All that good stuff.
You can hear me on 98.5 Sports Hub and read me on 98.5thesportshub.com. You can also catch me in the podcast I do with Matt Dolliff called the Sports Hub Underground. We do episodes weekly. Beyond that, I don't know. You can find me in the street. If you walk around Brighton, you'll probably just see me walking around if you live in the area. How about yourself?
You cannot find me in Brighton unless I'm driving to Warrior. But
coward.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid of Spoke Z. I feel like he's gonna find me and drag me to the last drop. And no one wants that. So yeah, I know. I'm frightened. But beyond that, in terms of my actual whereabouts, you can find my stuff on Boston.com and the Globe. You can also find me on Twitter at ConnorRyan_93. So Ty, thanks for coming on once again. This is episode 218 of Poke the Bear. You fans have a great rest of your week.